everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now. We're here live in the Linda Crafty Team Studios, and we are talking about real estate matters that matter to you. Today's show is probably one of those shows where we go, I'm not real comfortable talking about this. You know, I'm not real sure that this is something I want to talk about. Well, I'm going to tell you something. What is the last gift you're going to give in your life? See, we're in the holiday season, and after all, we talk about the holiday season. You know, the truth of the matter is, what are you going to be leaving someone else as a gift? Well, my guest is three-time champion on the show. Her name is Beth Bowen with Bowen Law Firm in Raleigh, in Cary, North Carolina. And Beth, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jay. It's good to be here again.
All right. So let's talk about a few things when it comes to the last gift that we give a family member. You wrote this, by the way, which is thank you.
You're welcome.
And because you said, after all, it is the season of giving.
It's the season of giving. What's the last gift you will give?
All right. So it's going to be a will.
Right.
So what does a will do for me?
Well, if you have a will, you get to decide who gets your stuff.
Okay.
As opposed to the state of North Carolina deciding who gets your stuff.
Okay. All right. And what is, okay, there's two words that I think can be a bit confusing. One is, what is probate versus non-probate? Yeah, what is that?
Yes.
And could you talk about a probate, non-probate asset? What is that?
Right. So one of the questions I have clients ask me is, why do I need a will? And so understanding what a will covers is very helpful to determine whether you need a will. So a will covers what's called a probate asset. Okay. And a probate asset is any asset that does not have a survivorship or beneficiary component.
Ah.
So, for example, my 1993 championship basketball from a local team is a probate asset.
Okay.
So I could say that goes to so-and-so.
Okay.
It's not got a way to list a beneficiary.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And so when you, can you make a probate asset non-probate? Can you make a non-probate asset a probate?
Sometimes you can. Sometimes you can. And depending on the circumstances, that could be a really good idea.
Okay.
So if you are married and you want your spouse to get your bank account, your individual bank account, you could make that a probate asset because it's non-probate as long as you're the only owner.
Right.
But you could make it a payable on death or a transferable on death asset. And then they automatically get that asset with the death certificate, as opposed to having to go through a formal process through our court system.
Okay. All right. So is probate expensive?
Not necessarily. In North Carolina, we have a fairly easy probate state. The most probate can cost in North Carolina is $6,000,
okay,
at least our court fees. That's the most it can cost. And that's a really sizable estate.
Okay. And so, all right, let's move then to trusts versus wills.
Mm-hmm.
How do we compare those two? Because I think sometimes people can get those two things confused.
Very much so. So, a will is only used when somebody dies.
Okay.
And there's a probate asset. So, you may have some clients who they have no real property, all of their accounts, they've listed beneficiaries, they've even made their vehicles survivorship. Mm. Assets. So they actually don't need a will. It's not a bad idea to still have one just in case there's an asset that shows up later. Now, a trust is a document. There's two kinds of trust. There's what's called a testamentary trust, which can mean a trust that only exists if somebody dies, a lot like the will. So that's your typical mom and dad die, they have minor kids, so there's a trust set up. And that trust only exists if mom and dad are not alive and the kids are under a certain age, they're minors. Mm-hmm. Then there's what's called a living trust. And so that, or an inter vivos trust, you might have heard that phrase, mm-hmm, inter vivos. It's kind of fun to say.
That is
Christmas,
kind of fun to say.
Inter vivos. That is a living trust that is used while someone is alive. And you can literally set up this trust and then transfer assets into that trust. And then those assets will be distributed according to the terms of the trust at particular times as the trust designates.
Okay.
And that can be a really good document to use in situations. Maybe you have real estate out of the state of North Carolina, and if you don't have a trust or some other mechanism to deal with this out-of-state property, there's going to have to be another probate in that state, which could be more expensive and more complicated. So sometimes out-of-state assets can create a need for a trust.
So those are the two main types of trust, is that?
Testamentary and living trust, yes. And then within the living trust, there's all kinds of categories.
Okay. Now, you talked about that if you have a trust, you don't necessarily have to have a will.
Well, that's a bad idea, but correct. The idea is that if you set up this living trust, all of your assets get retitled. Mm. It's almost like you go through a probate while you're alive because you're retitling all the assets to the trust. And then when the terms of the trust dictate, they get transferred out to whomever the beneficiaries may be. So it's sort of like another probate, but can be a really good document to use in certain situations.
But both is really recommended here.
Right. Yeah. Invariably, something will happen after somebody dies and like, oh, we forgot this asset, didn't get retitled in the trust. Right. Or there's a refund of money of some sort, and that cannot be refunded directly to the trust. So that creates a need for the estate process in North Carolina, which you would want your will to say everything feeds into the trust, because another great benefit of the trust is it is private. So not everybody knows what your wishes are, whereas a will gets probated in our local clerk of court's office, and you can read the will. You can see what somebody did in their will. Huh. But you don't have that many people actually go downtown and start reading wills at the clerk of court, unless it's somebody famous, or usually it's title searches title searches, because we're working on getting property transferred from an estate. So you don't have a lot of nosy people
searching that out.
Right. Okay. You know, usually folks that are interested in real estate are the ones who are there thinking about a way to buy property from an estate.
Okay. So let's talk about minor children.
Okay.
Probably
the number one reason I have folks come in my office. It's like, I've got these minor kids, and if something happens to me and my spouse, what do I need to do? Right. And you need to set up guardianship, right? And you need to tell everybody who you want to take care of your kids. And that way the state of North Carolina can honor that request.
Well, what happens if you don't?
Well, ultimately, the state of North Carolina is in charge of all of our children, right? They're in charge of you know, kids when parents don't do a good job and have to intervene. So ultimately, the state of North Carolina has statutes in place that would help them place the children in hopefully a good home, which could end up being family members. Right. But certainly that temporarily would probably be in our social system here, which could be very uncomfortable.
So this becomes critical.
Very critical.
Because this is a gift you could be giving to your minor children without them even knowing it. Because you are going to want to make sure, I would think, that they're going to be in a place that you want them to be.
Absolutely. You know, kids grow up and they will look back one day and they realize, wow, mom and dad, how devastating for us to have to deal with that at that age and even in adulthood. But to know that they had made sure these folks were going to take care of us and made sure assets were set up in a certain way so that we would be cared for.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a major traumatic event.
Yeah, but I think it's so important because I think sometimes when we're younger parents, you know, we're not often thinking about, because, you know, we think we're going to live forever and we don't think those things.
Right. And a lot of people get stuck on, well, I want to pick my sister and you want to pick your brother.
Right.
And they're like, so talking with somebody who can talk about the practicalities, what that would look like, how do we include everybody but name one person, their strengths and weaknesses, and everybody feel like they're a part of, because, you know, let's face it, it takes a village to raise children.
It sure does.
Right? With two parents, it still takes a village to raise children. So in a traumatic event that two parents are gone, it would need a huge village. So often we can work through those issues and get a way to have both sides participate.
Okay.
Before we go too far, I want to say this about, so the will is the mechanism to name a guardian,
Okay.
And another really good reason to have a will if there are minor children is if one parent dies and you don't have a will, the surviving spouse owns property with the minor children, which could end up being a real problem depending on what the asset is. Mm. So, example, spouse buys a home, gets married later, property's never titled in both spouses' name, they have children that are minors, spouse who bought the home dies, that property cannot be sold because the minor children own a portion of the property. Mm. So trying to get that property sold, I'm not saying it can't ever be sold, but it is painful to try to get that sold. Whereas if you've done a will that said everything goes to each other and then to the kids in trust, that gives the surviving spouse the ability to maneuver the assets for the benefit of the family instead of being stuck.
Okay, so then let's, I have a situation here that I just am thinking about, and I'm thinking about this. What if you have divorced parents with minor children? Because that just popped into my head.
Right.
How does that work?
It's another great reason to talk to someone about wills, guardianship. Ideally the divorced parents both agree on who that person would be to take care of the kids if both parents are gone.
Right.
And certainly if one parent's alive, they're the biological parent. They'll take care of the children. But if they're both gone, it'd be great if they both agreed on who that was. Now, you know, early on in a divorce, there's usually a lot of friction. Further down the road, you often see folks do better at getting along. Better to name somebody than not name somebody.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to another term that we hear quite frequently, and that is the executor.
Mm. Yes.
What is an executor?
Okay. So if you have a will, the person who handles settling the estate, making sure the terms of the will is carried out, reporting the appropriate information to our local clerk, dealing with the beneficiaries and the assets, is called the executor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
And if you have a trust, the person who is in charge of dealing with the trust assets, making sure the trust is correctly run and pays what it's supposed to pay and do what it's supposed to do and get those trust assets to the right beneficiaries, is called a trustee.
Okay. All right. Now, I know we talked about a living trust, but did we talk about a living will?
No, we haven't talked about a living will. So now we're going to just really get morbid.
Okay. Let's get
nice and morbid here.
Let's get morbid for Christmas, Beth.
But this is really a great gift to give your family. So a living will is often referred to as a declaration for natural death.
Okay.
So in North Carolina, we have three instances where you can specifically say, if I am in the persistent vegetative state, car accident, brain dead, it's clear you're not coming back, do you want life prolonging measures withheld? Mm. You can make some decisions like that ahead of time so your family members and everybody will know what your wishes are.
Okay.
So it can be a wonderful document. I've sat with a lot of clients whose loved ones were in that circumstance, and they made those decisions. And being on the other side of the table, they come and say, I really want that because it was so wonderful. And they say this, what a gift to have given us that we did not have to make that decision.
Right. Yeah,
we didn't have to wonder. We just had to deal with our own grief and help each other instead of wondering what our loved one would want, and then disagreeing with each other on that.
Right.
That really can cause some friction for the family left behind.
Right.
So it's actually a wonderful gift to give that what your wishes are.
And it's not an easy topic to talk about.
No, it's good to talk about it when you're young.
Right. Yeah, right.
and as you're growing older, it's harder to talk about it if you've never talked about it.
Right.
So, certain ages, once you get there, it's really hard to get folks to talk about that. And I also think it's a little bit generational.
Right.
I think generations now are doing a better job of communicating. Mm. When I first started practicing law 26 years ago, I'd have folks say, I would say, well, have you talked to your people that you want to be guardian? Oh, no, we don't talk about stuff like that. We're just going to let it be a surprise. I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's probably not a good thing to be a surprise.
Right.
And now this generation is coming through, oh, we've been through it. We've talked about it. And some will even say, I don't want to name them until I've actually talked to them about that.
Mm.
And really communicating about their wishes and their hopes and their dreams for their kids, for example, things like that. A lot of more openness.
I mean, is there a way, I know you've dealt probably with situations where they haven't talked about it. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage that conversation?
Yeah.
What is a way that you've, I mean, in your experience, that you've encouraged that conversation, like, you know, hold it here.
Yeah.
These conversations have to happen.
I think you go to your favorite restaurant.
Okay.
And you order your favorite appetizer. And if you like, whatever your beverage of choice is, and you talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to go somewhere outside of your home, your kitchen table, and just kind of put the paper down, talk about that.
But it's a conversation that has to be had.
It needs to be had. The more you share about your wishes with your family members, the better it's going to be for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then as your kids get older, sharing that with them, I mean, that's teaching them how to care for their children one day.
Right.
So really, when you do these types of things, you're caring for your family. And as, I mean, we kind of joked about it, it is the last gift you give.
Right.
But what a wonderful gift to have thought through everything. And then to talk to them about that so they can give feedback back. It actually can be a really unifying experience to go through when you're building these documents for your estate.
Mm.
And then when things happen, it is hard to lose someone.
Sure.
The experiences I've had with people who have been involved with their family members who've done these documents, they're grateful and their grieving process is more complete.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I hate to use the word easier, but maybe in some sense.
But maybe it gets processed quicker.
It does, yes. And they feel a part of. They feel like there's a belonging instead of a guessing.
Right.
There's a connection that gives them some wholeness within them as they move on with their lives.
Okay, so let's move on to powers of attorney. What are powers of attorney?
Powers of attorney. We in North Carolina have a couple powers of attorney. And the first thing to understand is your will is used when you're deceased. And your powers of attorney are used when you're alive. And typically you can't think for yourself.
Mm.
So the one power of attorney is called a healthcare power of attorney. And it's kind of what it sounds like. For whatever reason, you cannot make medical decisions for yourself. That could be something as simple as, I've got an ingrown toenail, and who should I go to do something about that, right? it could be more serious. I need to have a heart procedure, things like that. Just as simple as scheduling doctor's appointments, everything you do for yourself medically, from, you know, getting your prescriptions, talking to your healthcare providers, scheduling appointments, procedures, you can name somebody to do that for you if you cannot do it for yourself.
But you can give someone power of attorney with voluntarily, though, right?
Yes, that is the way you want to do it, as opposed to the state of North Carolina saying who is going to be in charge of your money.
Right.
So we do have a statute that would, if a family member or a friend or someone becomes incompetent, can't make medical decisions, and somebody's willing to, we call it being guardian of their person, you would then be able to do those things. But that's a court process and very difficult to move through those channels to get that. So a healthcare power of attorney is much better because you get to name someone who's going to make those medical decisions for you.
Okay, who makes sure that the power of attorney acts appropriately?
Right. Yeah, so a power of attorney, and we don't need to forget the other power of attorney. So there's two kinds, the healthcare and the durable. Do you want me to answer that question
Then let's answer durable.
Durable. So the durable, I call it durable general power of attorney. That's the, I think of it as the everyday business of life document. So that's the document that, oh, we need to sell the car. Well, how do we sign their name? well, if that person's given me power of attorney, I can sign their name to sell the vehicle.
I think that's what I was talking about voluntarily is the durable power of attorney.
Yes.
Where, you know, I can give my wife my power of attorney right now and she can sign a document for me, or she can give me hers.
Correct.
And I can sign a document for her.
And you can, and it can be in for two reasons. One is you go ahead and give it to the person and you have your wits about you. You could actually sign a car title, but you're somewhere else. So it makes sense that this power of attorney can do it for you. And it also can be, and more often it's you've become incompetent. You know, maybe dementia set in and you just no longer can sign your name. You no longer can talk educatedly with the utility company about the utility bill. So someone has been named power of attorney to do that for you.
Well, and it can be temporary, right? Haven't I seen in real estate where a seller or buyer gives power of attorney temporarily to someone?
Yeah, you can certainly limit your power of attorney to a specific situation. And you often see that in real estate. Most lenders are going to want a limited power of attorney as opposed to a broad power of attorney just for their transaction.
Okay.
So you would name somebody just for this particular loan on this particular day, and it expires in a certain amount of time.
Oh, okay. That seems
typically
really good stuff.
That's
really good stuff. All right. So what was the question we were? Who handles the powers of attorney appropriately?
Right. How do we make sure?
Right.
What do we do if we feel like a power of attorney or any other fiduciary, and I use that phrase fiduciary, that is an executor, a trustee, a power of attorney, someone who has a standard of care, a higher standard of care than typical. They have to act in the person's best interest, not their best interest. So I think of it this way. It's almost like you're stepping into the person's shoes when you're acting in their interest and behaving as them to some extent. So you would not do anything that's adversarial or hurtful to your person that you're acting on behalf of. Now, the question then becomes, well, what if they start doing something wrong?
Right.
You know, so the typical situation is dad, baby is deceased, mom's alive, got some dementia, she's named one of the kids power of attorney, the other two notice that their sibling power of attorney has a new vehicle and seems to be eating at a lot of fancy restaurants. And they're wondering where this sibling is getting all this money. And they're concerned it might be from mom's account. So you might then have some intervention by the siblings through the court process, through hiring an attorney. Probably be some aggressive conversations between the siblings. That might be a nice way to say it. I've certainly seen that be, it can be painful. So it's very important that whoever you name takes their job really serious.
Right.
And if there's any hint that they cannot be trusted, they're not the person to name.
Right. Yeah, it's a character issue, isn't it?
It is. I am fortunate in my years of practice, I've not had a situation with one of my clients where someone that was named ended up performing inappropriately.
Right.
So I'm grateful. I have had people call me with concerns, and so I know what that looks like.
Right.
That's a valid question.
Okay. So we've got all these documents, these gifts that we're giving, right?
That's right. We are blessing our family.
Right. With all these gifts, right?
That's right. We are.
You've been named the executor, trustee. We've made the will. We've done the trust. We've done the power of attorney. We've done all these. We've made sure the kids are taken care of, right? Our kids are taken. We've done all those things. Where do I keep these documents?
Great question. Well, let's see. There's the freezer. You probably heard that before. Like, people keep all their stuff in the freezer.
What?
Yeah. Keep all your documents in the freezer.
Come on.
If there's a fire, maybe it'll be okay in the freezer.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't recommend that, but you know.
But you know what? That makes sense, actually.
Yes, doesn't it? Yes. A freezer. You know, what's really great are the little fireproof safes at home. You know, something like that's a great place. And don't be super stressed out about that. You could always, if someone else has original documents of yours, if there's another set somewhere, you could always just keep it at home where you keep your other important papers.
Right.
If you have a desk drawer, a file cabinet that you use, some folks really like safety deposit boxes. I personally am not a believer in using those and all situations. I'm sure they're appropriate in some, but it can be a real pain getting in a safety deposit box if family members' names have not been added to the box and they know how to get into the box.
Right.
So we could spend another show with interesting experiences of folks who couldn't get in safety deposit boxes, and then they get in and discover not a gift they were thinking.
Okay. Right. So now the question becomes, can I do this myself, or what about using something like LegalZoom? Can I do that?
Yeah, there's a lot of things on the internet out there, and I think that's a great question. I personally have not spent any time looking at LegalZoom.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I have my own forms that I've created and keep up with through the law, and what's going to work best for each client's a little different. Just like every human being's we're uniquely made. So getting somebody to evaluate your situation is important to
really
think
important.
About. Yes. At the same time, you want to be cost effective in doing that. So I know you got to be sensitive to that as well. Can you do it yourself? We're always allowed to represent ourselves.
Right.
But there's that concern that maybe the gift that you meant to give does not happen. And I certainly have had some situations where people have come to me and given me the documents and said, what do we do now?
Right.
And there's not anything I can do because their person has died.
Right.
And then I've had some folks come and say, what do I do now? I'm like, okay, let's get you in here quick and get this tweaked a little bit. And it says exactly what you want.
Well, I think
you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, yeah, because I think the thing that you said is really critical here is every situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every person is different.
Right.
And, it's important that it's personal, really personalized.
It is. I find with the LegalZoom few that I've reviewed is folks have taken care of the one thing they were concerned about.
Right.
But then there's all these other things they hadn't thought about.
Right.
And so the state of North Carolina gets to deal with all those other things when really just tweaking a little bit would have made it so much easier.
Right.
So it's got to be really careful with that.
Okay, last question.
Sure.
When does the state of North Carolina get everything?
That is a wonderful question.
Well, you wrote it,
the
so
gift,
I thought.
Yes, I wrote this question. The gift, what could be better than to give our lovely, we're one of the 13 states.
Right.
First 13 states. Let's give back to one of the 13
We need to give
states.
Back. We need to give them a gift.
Granted, they get a little tax money occasionally, right? But we can keep giving even after our death. Basically, there's nobody. There's no family left in the state of North Carolina that's going to get everything.
Really?
Yeah. So if you don't have a will, and I have some clients that they don't have siblings. Their siblings didn't have children. They didn't have children, and they really are the last one in their line. So what do you want to do? Would you like to give it to your favorite charity or several charities? Who can you bless, right?
A friend.
Right. Can bless a friend.
Right.
So when I've been able to participate on both sides before and after and see those blessings, and it's really wonderful.
Yeah.
But yes, if there's no family left, it's going to go to the state.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You've been great.
Wow. So have you.
I've got so many things going on around me.
You do? Okay.
I've got so many things that people aren't seeing it, but I've got stuff happening all around me here. So I felt like I was so distracted, but you were absolutely fantastic. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
You can get in touch with me by telephone. 919-859-3224 or by email beth@bowenlawfirm.net.
And that's Bowen
lawfirm.net.
That's awesome. Thank you, Beth, so much.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, this is the show. You know what? You had a lot of choices. You chose us today. We thank you so much for doing that. You know what? We're going to be back next week with another great show. It's going to be another great guest. We're going to talk about real estate matters that matter to you. As I say to you every week, thank you so much. And ciao, everyone.
Living if you're dreaming small.